So today for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome UVA alumna J.B. Bryan. Jennifer J.B. Bryan, who graduated from the Comm School in 1989, graduated with double majors in accounting and finance and a minor in communications. She developed J.B. Bryan Financial Group Incorporated in 1995 and is celebrating more than 20 years of serving investors. JB takes the mystery out of investments, financial planning, and insurance through education. She believes that financial and investment planning should be top priorities for individuals and families of all ages and all income ranges. So please join me in welcoming JB Bryan with Explore Your Financial Goals and Define Your American Dream.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm just sitting here because I was like wondering, when did my slides start? I think I have to progress myself. But you all are very, very, very fortunate because you're able to share this moment of extreme fear with me. I am so frightened that I'm going to do something because I'm sitting at my desk and I'm going to get too comfortable and I'm going to start, you know, picking my nose or something. So please bear with me if I do. I am definitely the Donald Trump of financial services. I am always myself. I'm completely 100% J.B. Bryan. So I encourage each of you to do the same. If you're the type of person that asks a lot of questions, please go into the chat room and ask as many questions as you can. If you're quiet, make sure that you just be yourself. But I encourage you because I am a synergy type person. I love to have the feedback. Let me see if I'm going to sit. Oh, that's exactly how it works. So I hit the button. We're really rolling now, guys. Thank you again for participating in what is probably the first financial workshop that you've ever attended or webinar that was actually made by the person that presented it. I've been in financial services a long, long time, and we buy these prepackaged presentations and everything. So then when the Alumni Association mentioned the webinar, for some reason I went straight to, let's do something that's never been done before. So I promise you, you will never see this anywhere else. If so, they took it from me because this is straight from UVA grad, Exploring Your Financial Goals, Defining Your American Dream is 100% unique. I made this myself. So whatever the errors are, I did it straight from the president of the company. So let's talk about a few common dreams, some things that in researching or just being in the business so long that I've, seen that are, just common themes of what's important to you when you think about your future, especially financially. So if you have some things that are on your mind when you thought about American Dream, what did you think about? Please chat those thoughts to me right now. If you have a dream or if you have something that you're working on, please share it with me. We have a lot of people hanging out with us today, so make sure that your voice is heard and let me. And I'm quite sure I think it'll pop up and I will be able to give you some feedback on that. But some of the things that I have seen over the years is financial independence or early retirement, a common dream, becoming debt-free. We're going to talk about all of these and just some key steps in making it happen that I have used. And home ownership and your family career balance or owning your own business. And I think that, that in all of it, we're not going to, spend as much time as we should, but I want to, talk while you're thinking about sharing your dreams with me and letting me know. Please go ahead and put it in the box. The family career balance, where I guess when we're all, just faced with making different career choices, a big part of it is, do I really want to, have a career that stops me from being able to share any time, you know, with my family. So as you're thinking about your American dream, I think that family career balance has to be included. It's not like a lot of, you know, we're not going to elaborate on that during today's discussion, but it's something that I want you, you know, to really think about in everything that we talk about. Like financial independence is affected by that, because if you have a big family, and if part of financial independence is early retirement to you, then, you know, if you have, you know, children that are still going to be, you know, dependents of yours when you get into your 60s and 70s, then, you know, maybe early retirement, you know, may always be a dream, but we want to make sure, if you want to create it or make it a reality, there's going to be some sacrifice involved. But, you know, that, but you realizing that, you might want to educate your family. You might want to have your family close to you. You might not want to work all the time, but you want to have a, but you don't want to retire and you don't want to work at the work that you're doing. So you're going to have to really make some decisions along the way on a family career balance with each of these dreams that we'll discuss. And it matters. It matters, though. So with financial independence, I'm so good at this. I don't know if you all can see what I see, but I made a mistake. I'm going to get there. Okay, financial independence and early retirement. You'll need enough income to cover your expenses over the course of retirement. Should you have, and this is like a block is in the way of my slide, enough income in retirement to maintain your standard of living, we'll have to take steps with proper estate planning and an ability to leave an inheritance to your family or charity. But financial independence in that is really based on what financial independence is to you. But this is a suggestion or some things to keep in mind. I'm going to hit it correctly. So for many, financial independence means having 11 times your annual income. I'm going to have this two places. Unless somehow I can find out how to get this little toolbox out of the front of my slides. Not go away. So I'm going to use, thank goodness I have my other computer here with the same slides on it. So 11 times, let's look at 11 times your annual and your annual expenses. So not your annual income, but your annual expenses, because we want to make sure that we're not leaving work when we really can't afford to leave work. So one rule of thumb is making sure that you have at least enough money saved for 11 times your annual expenses. Good health. Good health is to me is the key to not have to worry about an early retirement. Many people are forced into retirement because of poor health. So good health will allow you to work harder and be more productive at your work if you want to stop early or if you're focused on a day-to-day financial independence. I like to focus more on financial independence because a lot of times for clients, when you say the word retirement, they think of things way down the road, but you could be financially independent today, and having good health will definitely help you get there. So let's keep exercising. Debt-free, a big part of financial independence, because if you don't have a lot of bills, then you really don't have to, that 11 times your annual expenses is not going to be that high. And then I have something that popped up on my screen saying sending a pen, but I hope you didn't see that. So the also another point to talk about with financial independence and early retirement is companionship and relationships. And are you married? Are you going to get married? And how to, you know, consider that. And you must include it in your financial decisions and in making sure that you have good relationships and good companionship. And statistically, the numbers say that most millionaires actually have never gone through a divorce. So unfortunately, those of us like myself who have been through divorce, we have to, you know, make sure that in recovering from a divorce financially, you make the take the proper steps. I mean, that could be a Friday forum itself, just financial issues surrounding divorce. Unfortunately, there are many for many folks. So match income from your assets with your expenses. So a lot of times we spend, and I hate to keep using the word a lot of times, I'm sorry. I'm going to switch from often and a lot of times, but the often I've found that we accumulate assets, but the assets that you have don't create any income for you. So in making financial decisions, especially when your focus is on financial independence, we want to make sure that we're purchasing assets that will create income and that the income that's creating from your assets will cover the expenses that you have. So that's the point of the 11 times your expenses goal, is having assets of 11 times your expenses, is that having a pile of assets, like it could be stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate, anything, but it's generating income for you and that you're using that to cover the expenses. And that merely is financial independence. Having income producing assets or getting income from your assets, or having stocks that you can sell that are going to more than cover your expenses that you have, that's financial independence. Manage risk and manage your all risk. Risk is not just risk from our investments, which is very serious, and we have to consider it. And too often, I was on CBS earlier this week. I often do WTVR, and on the Virginia This Morning show, and I was there when the market went down 1,000 points. And it, you know, was amazing that, you know, the media coverage of that event. And by the time I actually, went on the air, it had already started going back up. But that 1,000-point, open was over every major news network. It's everywhere. And it's still being talked about today. And it's just Friday. And we're still discussing what happened on Monday. So and my major point there is that if an investor has a portfolio that on a day like that, when the market does have a major dip and you're extremely worried about it, then your investment portfolio may not be invested appropriately for your risk tolerance level. So and this is a big issue, healthcare expenses. The financial independence in today's time has to include having the ability to cover healthcare expenses, and another good reason to make sure that you're in good health, because even at regular retirement age, that I've found that people in poor health have to start taking their Social Security earlier, so that because they know that because of their health concerns, they may not live to wait to take it till they're older. And so, and the more you wait past your full retirement time, you're getting a nice little bump up for not starting at your full retirement age and waiting until 70 when you're forced to start taking your Social Security. But anytime before that, definitely that's, early retirement, and you're going to have to cover all of your healthcare expenses. And so good health is vital, and having the funds to cover it, even though you're healthy, we still need to have and now are required to have healthcare coverage. So give us both. And the okay, you can see what I see. So financial independence is not primarily found in having more money, but in being able to find contentment in what we have. And doesn't that sound like something you can see how much I talk? That's something I would say, right? Early retirement brings with it the freedom from the daily grind. an opportunity for you to do whatever hobbies or passions that you would like to take advantage of and you've been neglecting over the years. Now, as a person who's living my dream, I mean, I started this firm in 1995. I left the wire house, and I would every day, you know, I have the most consistent part of my life has been my commitment to this dream of, you know, providing financial services, and I love it. You know, I never regret a day of working. I had my child on a Friday, and I was working on Monday, so I just took Saturday and, you know, Sunday away, and that's just because I really wanted to be back to work, so I love what I do, and I think that everyone should do that. Some people spend their entire career not doing, you know, what they love doing, and they have to look forward to retirement to do what they really enjoy doing, but I don't have any chats about anyone's dream, and now I know all these graduates. I have like 60 people on the line, and nobody has said anything about their dream. And then I can't see them. I don't
they're,
know.
They're up a little moderator. Higher, so just if you scroll back up, you'll see them.
It has chats. Supervised. I should be in the other chat.
Just in the regular chat room. If you just
alumni services at 11. Oh, I was in the moderator's chat room. Look at that, y'all. Oh, you could, things they don't teach you in commerce school. Yeah, I'm trying to blame it on the commerce school. The right. Let's see. So we have then you have all, look, it gives me a chat on everybody that joined. Wow, buying my own home. Traveling? Retirement. Travel benefits. Wow, that's nice. Paying off student loans, for real. That is amazing that I didn't even think about that. That's so true. And that is like definitely a brand new American dream. I was thinking that family career balance is like a new thing, but it is amazing. The number one reason that people have not been able to purchase a home, according to research, because the percentage of the population that owns home or buying their home is actually lower than it's been since the year I was born, which I'm not going to tell you, but it's a long time ago, you know, so it's like, that's a long time. And to think I graduated in 89, so way back from then. So this is because the number one reason that we don't have as many people that are being, you know, purchasing home, according to research they're saying, is because of student loan debt, a large contribution to the challenge. So in addition to, you know, lenders, their criteria has increased. So if their debt ratios, you know, have to be better than, and people have more debt because of student loan debt, you know, and the price of education has gone up dramatically. So it's a challenge. So, you know, debt-free still applies. These things that we're going to talk about and being debt-free and profiting on investments, they're very good, said, and the freedom for extensive travel. I really am thankful that I'm not a major traveler, but, and then someone said, no one can hear you at 12:18. Hopefully that's not now. Can you hear me now? Everybody hear me? It's saying no one. Yeah, I hope you can hear me. That would be really bad. I would be really hurt. Oh, I can hear you. Thank you. Oh, I love y'all. See, that's why I love UVA. You're good. I can hear you. We're going to focus on that. So the debt-free, get those school loans knocked out. I remember, so those of you who are young, I remember when I graduated and I had school loans. I worked 3 jobs through UVA, and I had all loans because as you can tell, I'm not a genius. So I, was the one that was always hustling. But I got through, and UVA was like right at whatever the loan limit was at that time. And then I remember by the end, then it started going into plus loans. And I know my parents were, very, very, mad that they were going to have to take care of it. But it's things now, it's a lot more on, the parents have to help out. If I was going to school today, I would not be able to get those loans just in my name. But, the criteria has changed a lot, and they're making, I guess, because there's probably a lot of young people defaulting, so they want the parents to get them now, I guess. Yeah, they've figured it out. But we want to have them. But it does go away. It does go away. I went to graduate school. I remember the school loans stopping, and then, I worked full-time, and I went to graduate school that night, and it does. And my employer was paying for the graduate school, so it happens. It goes. We just have to stay committed to it, and we have to know what our current debts are, as I'm mentioning here, and let's make sure that we prioritize our debts by their highest interest rate. Talk with a financial advisor, definitely. Create a budget, because I know that we have all these software packages and everything out there now to really help us, really create a budget that is workable for us. Because just as in with health situations, like when I think about it, when I'm really like about my nutrition and I want to do right, when I journal what I'm eating, I do so much better than I just go, I don't need that journal. And I think that's what we do with budgeting. When we don't want to keep up with what our spending is, when we really don't want to do right, then we, we go, I don't need a budget. But when you really write down the budget and specifically write down, the current debts and, knowing what the interest rates are, and so that you can know which ones have the higher interest rate and then work your way down. Because sometimes we're thinking about, I got to get rid of this school loan debt just because it's large. Meanwhile, there's an accumulation of credit cards and things like that that have much higher interest rates. So we want to avoid the credit cards and stay focused on, this school loan debt is a much lower interest rate than that, 18, 20% credit card that I, accumulated in college you may have. I remember I got out of college with $1,000 on a credit card, and I thought that was the biggest amount of money. I was like, I'll never be able to pay this off. But so I can imagine now that I've been out 25 years, like what would be the case, for now. If a kid could get $1,000 then, they're probably giving students like $10,000-$20,000 in credit card, lines available, and definitely want to stay away from it. Even as you're working, I spoke with a cousin of mine last night, and she's a professor in a college in North Carolina, and she said, I just got a raise, and, what should I do? And I said, well, you got to increase what you're putting into your retirement plan. I said, you should be doing it. She's no kids. She's not married. You should be putting at least 20% into the retirement plan. And then she said, well, what do I do about the debt, my debt? And I said, I don't even think about it. I can't imagine why someone with no children, I don't even think they should have a car payment. That why would you be financing anything? And I told her, it took me like a day to respond to that text, because I was like so disappointed. And I said, you should have no debt. I know I was kind of snapping at a professor and everything, but she should have no debt. I was like, you've got to knock that out. And at the same time, you're going to have to continue, do the 20%, do the maximum that they'll allow you to do. Do it, you've got to save it away. And because, when you get to a point, sometimes you just need to be punished. And you're going to have to, it's going to have to be self-induced. Or then when you're older, when it really matters, you'll regret not doing it. So it's just kind of like, if you have a class reunion coming up in 5 years. There's some people who will start planning so that they'll be beautiful in 5 months before the reunion, and there's some people who started 5 years or 10 years. They've always been about their fitness, so they're going to totally look better and be healthier than a person who started 5 months ago, no matter how much they try, and money works the same way. So cut costs everywhere that you can if you want to be debt-free. If you want to get rid of those school loans, then they have to be a top priority. And then, you know, pay extra on everything that you can. Pay extra. Right. And then save everything that you don't spend. Definitely. Save everything that you don't spend is a big part of being debt-free. Spend wisely, and especially the tax refunds, if you get one. You know, if you get money back on your taxes, that's a good way to knock down your school loan debts. If you have nothing else, if you have a higher interest rate debt, then we definitely want to put that, you know, money from the tax refund to go towards the higher interest rate debt, because it's, you know, compounding a lot faster, a lot higher. It's hurting you, definitely. And I'm one. I don't care how much the store credit card discount is going to be. I will not get store credit cards, not, because it's just a privilege I just don't want to have. It's a temptation I don't need. It's like going to say, oh, this comes free. This French fries come free with the burger, you know, whatever. I don't want it. You know, so don't take it. Just don't take it. So commit to a change in your behavior. Be happy living within your means. We have to, you know, make sure that we adapt, and that's also about the family and career balance. That if you've decided on a particular career that really doesn't focus on making a lot of money, you know, then, you know, get to a point of happiness, because a person who is in a career that doesn't make a lot of money is sometimes surrounded by a lot of people who chose a career that makes more money. And if you start, you'll start accumulating debt in attempt to keep up with their behavior. And it doesn't mean that they're not in debt also, but make sure, I believe I've done it, you know, as an entrepreneur. If I were working somewhere, it would be totally different, you know, being a financial advisor. But I'm the head of this firm. I have payroll to make. I have people and children, their families depending on me to be reasonable to build a firm that's strong and healthy and, you know, keeping myself healthy. So a big part of being debt-free is staying healthy and focusing on building your credit, you know, making sure that you check your credit. You know, at least I check mine at least once a month, just because of the high rate of identity theft that we have, that we're dealing with now. A question that we have is, what are the best ways to minimize tax burdens to help build future savings? And the very good question. I'm trying to figure, it's not going to fit into any of the dreams, but definitely that want to minimize taxes should never become a burden unless someone is like investing improperly, where they don't have enough money tax deferred, or they're not participating completely into their work plan. So then, which is a key way to reduce your taxable income. And the best ways to minimize tax burdens to help build future savings. So it would be to, well, if you participate in a retirement plan, especially those that might be through the company that you work for or for your own company, if you participate in retirement accounts, you're doing both. You're minimizing your taxes and you're building your future savings, definitely. So let's see, we have another question. I believe paying an advisor 1% to 2% is the ridiculous fee. How do we go about, he said, oh, Lord. He's like, yeah, sure, you lost me. Now, how do we go about finding a thing, and I wanted to get to your question without going to the next one. How do we go about finding a qualified advisor that will work with an hourly fee versus taking a percentage of my portfolio? Oh man, that's definitely easy. You know, I mean, you're definitely talking to one, but it definitely, there's, you know, they're everywhere. I just think that sometimes you're talking to an advisor that only wants to charge a fee, but, you know, most advice, if you just say, I just want your opinion and I don't need to hold your assets. Now, if you're holding your assets in custody with that advisor, then you're going to go into, you know, the fee. But if you have your, you know, assets somewhere else, or like it could even be like your retirement plan at work and you just want to go to someone and pay them an hourly fee on what the proper allocation is, just call and say, well, does your firm offer, you know, just hourly financial planning? And it's there. I do it. So the best ways to minimize your burden, how do you feel about paying off a mortgage if we can versus using funds for additional investments? You know, it really depends on your financial goals. The question was, should you pay off the mortgage or keep it invested, or maybe they're referring to like paying extra payments into their mortgage. So trying to pay off their mortgage instead of doing it into, you know, their retirement savings or things. So, that really depends on what, if they just have a goal and it's most important for them to have their house paid off at a particular time, then, but they have to realize that you're putting everything into that mortgage, giving you the return on your investment of whatever you're anticipating. So you may not be taking the best steps as far as diversification. Of course, it would be great if you could do both. You know, you might want to, but you definitely, I think it's, you know, best since it's a residence and it's never going to generate income for you, because if you're planning on living in it, then, you might want to consider making sure that all your eggs aren't just into that investment, because it's, that's something that we really have to sit down with an advisor and talk about. Emergency fund of 3 months, says, and I'll probably skip some of you. I'm sorry. It's hard to, like, get through. And I'm glad you asked these things. I really enjoy these questions. How do you feel about paying off a mortgage if you use it for funds? And we go down a little bit. Emergency fund of 5 months cost. See, every time when something comes in, it, like, pushes it. I've heard it is good to have an emergency fund of 3 months, it has to be a better way for me to see this, increased size of fund. Let's try that.
JB?
No, it doesn't.
I can read you her question. She's heard it's good to have an emergency fund of 3 months' costs. Would you recommend not contributing the max in retirement in order to build that up?
That's a very, yes, I would, it's definitely very important to make sure that you build up your emergency fund. So put as much as you can into your retirement account, but yes, if you had to choose between the two, you need to have your emergency fund available, because if not, you're going to end up going into the retirement account to get access to, you know, funds, because emergencies do happen. So that's a good point. Is there another one you can help me with?
Yes, there's a couple of other questions that came in a minute ago. The first question was whether you recommend any specific tools for budgeting.
Yeah, the best tool for budgeting is using your your phone, the phone app for the bank that you bank with, you know, and I guess so in the budget, but that's the best way of, like, keeping up with it. And then making sure that you first just use a pen and paper to determine what the budget is. And then at the end of the month, you could see where there's a difference. And I think there's, like, I have it in my financial planning tool as a budget, just so for goal setting for clients. But there's also some really good ones. I think like Quicken might have, I'm sure Quicken has some things like that as well, but there's one else, Mint, I think it's called Mint.com or things like that, but I think that's what they do, you know, help with that. But I don't think that But, you know, all of those things are for subscriptions and for you to, you know, pay, you know, monthly fees and things like that. I don't think that we have to do that. We just need to, you know, make a commitment to make your own Excel spreadsheet. Just type it down and then go back and review it each month. Then they have the Google spreadsheets and things. Just, you know, manage it just like you would. You can make yourself a template, you know, and then just put in, like, what your goal was and what you actually spent, you know, and how you did. But good question. And then...
Okay, there was a couple more, too. So just let me know when you're ready to move forward with your... Okay.
Okay. I'm ready. I was trying to read it, but I was...
Oh,
you know,
that's okay. That's
that.
Okay. Nicholas asked, what's the best, given the current market tendencies, retirement fund, IRA, 401k, et cetera?
Well, that's definitely based on what your risk tolerance are and what your age is. And but if he's talking about an IRA versus a 401k, you know, you definitely want to, if you have a 401k available to you, you want to participate in the 401k first. And what do you invest in the 401k? That's when it's important to get some really valid financial advice. And too often we don't. We just get into the work plan, and then you don't ever get financial advice till the end. And then you go into the financial advisor, and you have this lump sum of money that could have been possibly double that if you had managed it, you know, or got assistance managing it while you were working. I think it takes a team on every aspect of our life, you know, but we're going to have to make that an investment in getting that professional advice. If you have someone that you admire and they're doing well, you know, ask them, who do you work with that helps you build your future? I mean, my business is built off referrals.
Okay, and a follow-up question on that. Can you contribute to both IRAs and the work plan?
It depends on income. Everything in financial services, it depends, right? But it really does. The IRS has a maximum of, you know, income, and once you go over the maximum income, you start declining in the, you know, amount that you actually, you know, can write off your IRA contributions. So you want to, you know, if someone is it financially able to do both, most likely their income is too high for them to be able to do both, so they need to focus on maximizing their work 401k. And then once they've maxed that out, many employers now have Roth IRAs, or a good area to put, you know, your extra savings. They don't have the tax deduction, but the money grows tax deferred, you know, so you know, definitely have to, you know, look into that if it's available.
Okay.
Do you have anything else?
There's a couple more. Should life insurance be part of our American Dream plan? And if so, what kind would you recommend?
The life insurance definitely is, if a person wants to leave a legacy. Life insurance, there's no such thing as an American Dream plan, but it's just like, but as far as financial independence and having it for the next generation, you could put it in that category, financial independence, you know, definitely. I believe in permanent life insurance coverage, so that would be either whole life or universal. There's even variable universal, but there's permanent or there's term. There's permanent or temporary. There's only two really types of insurance, either, you know, and then there's types of permanent, and that's where the whole life and pro-life or universal or variable universal, you know, and those you choose between the two. And the universal has like a flexible premium and, you know, can have variable interest rates. The universal, but the whole life is a more it's a more fixed, and it's not as flexible. And when you decide on that premium, that's what it is as far as what your payment is. So, but the permanent just gives you the coverage guaranteed for as long as you make that payment. Versus with term, your coverage is going to end at the end of that term. And if you don't you're going to have to renew, and you're older. So with term, you can that every year or every 5 years or every 10 years, whatever, the premium for that coverage is going to go up. But the key is to have the amount of coverage that you really need. So sometimes you'll have to have some permanent, and may have to supplement it with term in order for it to fit within your budget to have the proper coverage that you need for your family. So, you know, both can come into play. Or sometimes you'll have term at work, but you'll have some permanent life insurance that you'll own.
Okay, thank you. Got a couple more. A question asking if you can talk about setting up a revocable versus irrevocable trust as a way to avoid heirs from paying estate taxes, given that... given that estate taxes have risen so dramatically.
That's a perfect question for... Perfect question for a webinar for an attorney, you know, because they would have like a big disclaimer right now. I'd be like, JB, you better not answer that question. That's a legal question. But that's a great area, and that is definitely, you know, what you need to be thinking about if you have those type of challenges, estate questions, and there's nobody better to answer that question than your neighborhood estate attorney. They're waiting for your call. And I know some. If you need some, just let me know.
Okay. They're continuing to come in. So another question asked.
Oh, great.
If you'd like to move on with the presentation, we can do that and get back to them.
Yeah. Great. So I'm not seeing any new ones, but I'm glad you said that. Yeah, because mine stopped at like the 3 months, but yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, great. Thank you, girlfriend. You did a great job. You would be great on CNN or CNBC. You could do either. So with being debt-free, we talked about building your credit. So we're going to go forward. That's the last point, is to make sure that with debt-free, you know, that you continue to monitor your credit. I think that's very important. Save everything you don't spend. Spend wisely. Take advantage of any tax refunds that you have. Commit to a change in your behavior and things like that. So home ownership, another common American dream. And the most important part is your question. So I'm just going to get to this, and then they have home ownership, and then one other, and we're going to finish off with questions. Let me know if the questions are irritating you. You can say that too. I won't be offended, and we'll stop. So, but I think that the questions are great because you learn something from each question. You can tell everybody has like, you know, such different personalities, different needs. So home ownership, decide what you can afford. And it's true, you know, that you should decide. A lot of times you go into the home ownership, you know, the realtor is telling you, you know, you go in and go, I want to buy a home, you know, and the realtor is telling you, you know, what you can afford, what you shouldn't buy. You know, if they say, you know, are you and your spouse, you know, together, you could do this, da, 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 then, you know, it's up to you to make the decision that we only want to base this on one income. Now, of course, both homes can be, and both names can be on the loan, and names can be on, you know, the title of the home and everything, but you don't have to spend everything that you can spend. Your budget is up to you, because you don't want your home to stop you from being able to save in other areas, as one person mentioned. So develop your home wish list. You know, what type, what you want in your home, everything. Start saving immediately. Start saving now. Start saving and saving and saving. You can't save enough. I really believe in at least a 20% down payment on the home, so that you go into your home with instant equity. No matter, you know, what they tell you, you can do two loans and only come out with 10%. You can just put 10% down, or, you know, there's some government programs that have like $1,000 to purchase a home. You know, the foreclosure rate on things like that is so high, and then you're paying extra interest rate because you're going into it with less than 20% down. So, shoot for that. That's a good goal to have. Get your credit in order, as we talked about. Determine your mortgage qualifications. Get pre-approved. Calculate the total cost of home ownership. You know, sometimes, you know, we really don't think about it. Everything's going to cost more. Everything's going to cost more. And, you know, if you're not a loan person, you know, even factor that in, that you're going to have to, you know, get everything taken care of, you know, if you don't want to do it yourself. And then what about, this is like, you know, amazing. You can tell that an investment advisor made this PowerPoint. But, you know, I really wanted to do it because I wanted to, because this is like the biggest mistake that they, you know, tell you in PowerPoint school. I remember at UVA, I had a job at the Federal Executive Institute, and I was teaching them how to use Harvard graphics. And I haven't done this myself in so long because, you know, we just buy them. But this is a masterpiece. Look at the typo in the get inspired section, like get inspired with a big C behind it. What is that? But so with entrepreneurship and owning your own business, I'm definitely an expert on this. I've been doing that a long time. But I do believe that you should do what you know. I think it made a big difference that when I decided I wanted to do something, and when I wanted to leave, you know, the investment firm, that I, you know, still an investment. I mean, some people, they'll do something for a while, and then when they start their business, they are doing something totally different than what they did and when they were working. So I think that our work experience, when you're thinking about entrepreneurship, every day that we work for someone else should be about learning to be better at what you want to do, you know, on your own. And, you know, then you're more likely to be able to, you know, take the relationships from your past, you know, with you and everything. So it kind of, you hit the ground, you know, running. You know, I was fortunate because the firm that I left, you know, in 1995, they had, you know, had no idea and definitely did not think that I would be in business this long. So they said, it's okay, you can take all your customers with you, little girl, you know. And now, you know, I saw my old boss one day, you know, walking downtown, and he was like, oh, my God, you're doing so good. So, you know, you never know. But a lot of times when you're in the same industry, they are not going to let you take your customers with you, but you can still, you know, you're taking your expertise and you're taking, you know, a lot of relationships outside of the clients with you. So do what you know and keep working. It might be necessary. Now, of course, I couldn't because you're in the same thing. But, you know, if there's a way that you can continue to work while you're building your business, you know, definitely take advantage of it. Establish a business plan. Establish a budget plan. The planning is key to everything that we've talked about. And definitely being inspired. Inspiration is everything. You know, I don't even know if I don't think I mentioned here on my list of all this stuff which could have been stacked over to the other side. But the key to entrepreneurship to me is, you know, focusing on creativity and not competition. And that it's your creativity that's going to help the business work, you know, not how many other businesses you can put out of business or, you know, it's going out of your way to make sure you let them know, you know, how much, you know, better you are than the competition, but instead show how much more creative you are. So, you know, do your research, you know, make a plan again, do two plans. Let me see, so I can see it's cutting me off. Plan your finances. Choose a business structure. It seems like everybody is a LLC now. I don't understand, you know, this huge movement, you know, away from C corp to LLCs. I love being a C corp. It's worked for me for 20 years. I don't get it, but sometimes I think that just these things become popular just because it's something that, you know, lawyers, you know, like to do, or it's the trend at the time, and everybody just starts doing it. So the pick a name for your business, register your business, pick a location for your business, and definitely, pick an accountant and pick an accounting system. The accounting is everything. It's everything. Can I say it one more time? You know, your accounting, how you keep up with your funds, how you keep up your, your cash flow, how you keep up your employee benefits and your contributions and your taxes, and it's everything. And, and talk about automation. You know, there's so many ways now, that you can get that done. But I just think if you can, set up a partnership with a good, accountant, not just a tax preparer, but someone that can actually help you with business planning, it makes a difference. For 15 years I had an accountant, and all he told me was, I don't understand why you do this. Why don't you just go back to work for somebody, blah, 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 and over. And so, like, one time I said, he was an independent accountant, too, and I said, like, why don't you go back and work? He said, I guess that's a good point. But I'm wondering why it took me so long to ask him that question. And he didn't ask it again, but I fired him quickly afterwards, and because he's doing a horrible job, you really want to make sure. And I think because of my double major in accounting, by the grace of God, I was able to, but I'll maintain it. But I'm like, why pay him and I'm still, having to do so much of this work? So, make sure that you, run your numbers, organize your business very well. Being in financial services, we're regularly audited, right? We just keep the government in business, in financial services. So, but everybody's business isn't like that. But because we're audited, that helps us, because we're, they check through everything. They check your checking account. They check everything in this business. I don't even know if doctors are checked as much as my business. But your business might not be like that, but you have to run it like you are, like the government can walk in your office anytime. That's the best way to do. It's the best way to do. And promote your business. And the best way, I believe, to promote your business is through the relationships that you set up. You don't want to be the one that's saying that you're great, but you want to have a team of people who know that you're great, and they're going to tell everyone that they know about it. So using your customers to promote your business, using your relationships to promote your business, and surrounding yourself with people that believe in your business, it's really important, really important. So, if there's anyone out there that's, interested in entrepreneurship, please, make sure you send something into chat also. Maybe one day we'll do a webinar on, entrepreneurship and starting your own business, because that would be a great one also. So I'm ready for questions now. We have 12:54, so we only have a few minutes, guys. You all have been great. The participation is great. I was like, Friday at noon? I mean, you alumni career center, y'all are marvelous. Participation is great. See, it's not me. I know it's not me. But I hope that everybody that participated, that you are empowered by this, that this will change your life. Change your life. What did I say? I wanted to make sure that I share with you that creativity and not competition is the key to your future, your American dream, to everything, to really commit the rest of your life to being creative, and not trying to worry about being competitive. That our habits, our daily habits, create our future. That it's not, but it's in, and that's why we find over time and go, gosh, I can't believe that I do that just like my mom, or I do that just like my dad. It's because of what you've seen, what their daily habits are. We inherit those daily habits. So, check out yourself, and make sure that, to have a book that I'm working on, and I have a chapter, I call it Check Yourself Before You Wreck Yourself, but I grew up in the 80s, I love rap, but it's true that we have to make sure that we, are constantly checking ourselves, check our spending, check our budgeting, check our goals, check our support, and finally, never give up. we can't. We have to make sure that we die trying. Don't ever give up on your dream.
Thanks, JB.
I'm ready.
So before we start up with questions again, I just wanted to thank everybody again for coming because we're coming up on 1 o'clock. So if anyone does need to leave the webinar, we appreciate your joining us today. And everybody who registered will receive the recording in an email later this afternoon. And I also wanted to mention that our next webinar is coming up on Friday, September 11th. Lauren Fritsch will be presenting Magnetic Leadership, the Four Characteristics of an Authentic Leader. So we hope you can join us then too. So JB, I will start with another question. We have had a few more coming in. We had a question about whether you recommend paying off your mortgage if you can and losing the tax breaks.
Well, you never purchase a home for the tax incentive because the mortgage just is not enough. It's, you're only writing off a percentage of the interest based on your tax bracket. So, you know, there's so many other things that you can do for a much better tax incentive. But if it's important to you to pay off your mortgage, then definitely pay off your mortgage, because when you get to the point where you're, you know, you're not even paying much interest probably at that point when you're thinking about paying it off. So, you know, it's just a decision on how you want to invest your money. Do you want it there, knowing that if you pay off your mortgage, the only way to get that money back is going to be to refinance it again or sell it. So it depends on the liquidity that
you want. Okay, thanks. And then a couple of other questions related to purchasing homes. One person asked how you feel about purchasing rental property if your rental rate does not cover all expenses, and if so, how many years should you finance? And then the second question was about buying a foreclosed home, and are those typically auctioned?
Yeah, the big mistake that we make is that people, when they are purchasing doing rental property, you allow it to have a negative return on investment. And you would never do that with any other investment. You wouldn't. So make sure that you realize that you have to have a positive return on your investment. And you want to. But in doing investments into mortgage or into buying a mortgage, getting a mortgage for an investment property, you know, it's definitely a better use of a mortgage than any other time, because you're trying to leverage it to get a return on that investment. It's basically like buying stocks on the margin or something. So you're using it, you know, leveraging it for an investment, and actually getting a mortgage on an investment property is probably, you know, better as far as wealth development than getting a mortgage on your home, the property that you live in, because the property that you live in is not creating any income potential for you because you're going to live in it. Unless you get a duplex or something and you live on one side and you rent out the other. But bottom line, the leveraging it and using it for an investment and getting a mortgage for an investment property is, you know, not the problem. The problem is, if you're not getting the income to cover it and you're getting a negative return on it, then, you know, that's not a good thing. It would be up to you to see how many years you're going to allow that to go on. And foreclosures, what was the question about the foreclosures? There was a question about foreclosures.
Let's see. That was... What about buying a foreclosed home? Are those typically auctioned?
I don't know, but I know your real estate agent would know about foreclosures also. But I do think that you could go to auctions. I think that's what you get at auctions, are foreclosed properties that the bank is taking to auction, something like that. But, yeah, but I'm sure that that's easy to find out. You could contact, you know, even the city or county, you know, or banks directly. But I would really probably start with a realtor that focuses on foreclosure, or find a website for foreclosed properties or something.
Thanks. So the next question What is the ideal asset allocation for your 401k, the split between stocks and bonds, et cetera?
The question you asked is, what is the ideal asset allocation for, you know, my 401k? So you said your, you know, and then it would be for your 401k. So it's impossible for me to actually say that, because it is like one of the most personalized decisions that you can make for your future. So you definitely, you deserve to have an ideal asset allocation for your 401k, and make sure that you talk with a financial advisor and they look at all of the options that you have, and that you do some sort of risk analysis also. They should ask you questions about how experienced you are as an investor and everything. And they should look at all of the assets that you have, what things you have away from the 401k and things like that, so they really are getting what your exposure is to each different asset class. But good question, but that would be impossible and inappropriate for me to answer.
Okay, thanks. So another question, at what age should we consider purchasing long-term care insurance, or do you recommend buying it at all?
I think that long-term care is going to be a challenge, you know, for a lot of people, and it's getting more and more and more expensive. I don't know. I think most of the problem is that kids aren't taking care of parents anymore. What's the world coming to? But you know, you definitely need to have a plan on how you would take care of yourself. It's amazing the amount of money that it, you know, the estimates or the cost of a long-term care need. So I suggest that you talk with your financial advisor about creative ways of meeting that need. You know, I've used life insurance with riders for chronic illness, you know, things like that, but just, you know, explaining to them the different needs. I mean, I've had clients that have had, you know, really bad experiences with long-term care and it not getting approved until the spouse was dead, you know, and they've been paying into it for 20 years. So you want to make sure that before you purchase a long-term care insurance, that you get all the details on how do I ever get to use it? You know, how sick do I have to be? How long is the wait going to be? And things like that, but make sure you get all of the details. And then, you know, also consider, you know, some creative options, because, you know I have, and your financial advisor should be able to also find some ways for you to save money on getting that coverage, or, you know, even thinking about, am I self-insured? Like, do I have enough, you know, that'll take care of, you know, expenses? Can you take this money with you wherever you are?
Okay. And so what can you do to reduce taxes once you have retired?
What can you do to reduce taxes once you've retired? You know, reducing taxes when you're retired is like a lot easier reducing taxes when you're working, because the key there a lot of times is you can control your income, because for a lot of retirees, you're taking money out of your IRA. So, you know, doing a proper analysis of your tax return is definitely the way to stop, the way to start on that. Sometimes you're taking to, you know, your Social Security income is being taxed, and you got to figure out ways to reduce your total, you know, income section. On the middle section on the 1040, you know, will show, you know, where are your income sources that are considered, and you may have to figure out how to some of your investments might be able need to be switched to tax deferred investments, and looking into tax deferral as an option. But retirement, actually, because well, retirement is a time where it's actually easier to control your taxation, because when you're working, if you're working for someone, you're trying to maximize your W-2 income as far as your income, but you can, you know, you can, of course, reduce the income while you're working by putting it into, you know, some of it into a 401k, but then you have maximum amounts that you can put in there. But if you're retired and you're taking aggressive withdrawals from your IRAs, you can reduce your income just by making sure that you're not taking out more than you really need. But, of course, at 70 and a half, the IRS starts telling you what your minimal required distribution is. But so, you know, definitely talk to your financial advisor about that and, you know, see if they can help you look at your tax return. I have found so many errors in tax returns. It's amazing. Everybody's being so nice. They said, thank you. Great presentation. It's so
thank
nice.
Thank you. So there's two questions left. One is, what is the most expensive budget item for a new business, excluding the physical office space and the employees? And then there was another question about what would be a reasonable annual fee for a financial advisor. Someone is paying $900 per year to have the ability to call him anytime and is also taking 1% of her investments. So those are the two remaining questions.
Wow. Can you be my customer? No, but she said they were getting 1% and paying. She was paying a flat fee also. The you know, it's hard to say that something is high to someone else. Is, you know, then I feel like, you know, that, but the bottom line is you have to make sure that you feel like you're getting what you pay for. You know, are you getting what you want? It's it just depends. You know, I guess my question would be, depending on your portfolio, with both of those together, what percentage is that? You know, and then, you know, also, you know, make sure that each of those, you know, fees, you know, the good thing is that both of those most likely are tax deductible, you know, and they're that, you know, the regular fees are, you know, how they're structuring the other 900, you know, what that's for. Are you maximizing that other 900? Are they, you know, allowing you to use that? Are you, you know, actually getting at least an hour of service each month, you know, and so the bottom line, I think, is just, are you getting, you know, what you want out of the relationship? And because some, you know, relationships are, you know, priceless, you know, or you feel like I'd pay anything to have this person helping me. But I think that when you ask, is this too much, then generally it is. Because if it's right, then you're not going to ask. If you're getting what you think you deserve, you're not going to even ask. You're going to be so happy, you know, that you're doing. You couldn't even imagine letting them know that I'm leaving because someone else is, you know, because you're not going to leave because someone is cheaper. You just want proper service. It's obvious that you can afford it, so you're paying it. But you want to make sure that you are, you know, you're not getting enough for what you're paying. That's what you're saying, I think.
Okay, thanks. And then the second part of the question, question was, what do you see as the most expensive budget item for a new business?
Yeah, that you know, that is definitely industry specific. You know, because for some businesses, the ones that she mentioned or she talked about employees and things like that, you know, they might not even have that. They could have a fully internet-based business, but they have to pay, you know, a lot more for technology or something, you know, that might be their biggest expense. So your top expenses are definitely going to be based on because you should be putting more into, like, I have to spend a lot of money on research materials and things like that, but your another industry is not going to have that kind of money, you know, going out to, you know, Morningstar and stuff like that. So it you know, and then I have, like, legal fees are a big part, because I have, like, different compliance documents that are always required. Everything has, you know, reviewing things and things like that. So I think that that's the most appropriate answer is that, you know, you make sure that you look up. I think there's research, actually, also, that you can look up the balance sheet for your industry, and it'll break it down into percentages of, you know, what is spent in that industry in each section. forgot what it was, but there was a pool like that out there. But good question. I know like a chamber of commerce might have some research like that too.
Great. Well, thank you so much, JB. That was the last question. So this will conclude our webinar for today. Thank you again to JB for her wonderful and very informative presentation. We appreciate you all joining us today, and we hope to see you again on September 11th. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for attending, everyone. Have a great weekend.